it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
Wait. Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Started out this morning feeling so polite. I always thought a fish could not be caught who didn't bite. But you got some bait waiting and I think I might like nibbling a little afternoon delight. Skyrockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. Brother Jay's on the wrong side tonight.
I'm often on the wrong side.
Well, we'll see if you're on the wrong side of history, because tonight we're talking about a historic movie, Good Will Hunting, 1997, directed by Gus Van Sant, produced by Harvey Weinstein and the Miramax Corporation, Kevin Smith, and Scott Mosier.
Who's Scott Mosier?
He's Kevin Smith's writing partner. He does the Smodcast with Kevin Smith.
Okay.
So, Brother Drew, this is on your list.
This is on my list.
Why don't you introduce us to Good Will Hunting?
Good Will Hunting was a movie that came out, it was late 90s. It was, it hit me at just the right time in my life, and I loved it. I still love it. I think this is a great movie. I'm excited to talk about it with the two of you. There's some things about it that are a little dated now, and certainly the two leads, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, they bring a lot more baggage, I think, now than they did when it first came out. So, that's a little interesting watching it now, but I think this is a really effective and affecting movie, and I'm interested to hear what your takes on it are.
Brother Jay, this is the first time you're watching this movie?
That is correct.
What's your initial first take?
It was okay.
All right, well, that sounds better than the last 2 weeks.
Hopefully this is going to continue on the upward trend. Next week is 85 Batman.
85?
Is it 85?
I think it was 89.
89.
Oh, sorry.
Because I wasn't able to work at the movie theater in 85.
Oh, okay. So, 89 Batman. So, I watched this movie on video, maybe in Missouri, and I remember liking it a lot. I thought it had great characters in it. Watching it now and, you know, reading the history of it through a late 2017 lens, I think the movie does have some serious baggage. Not just the Harvey Weinstein baggage, although there definitely is that. But this movie has a lot of story behind making of the movie as well as the movie itself.
Indeed.
So shall we talk about the making of the movie first, or shall we talk about the movie itself first?
Well, I can tell you my initial take. Watching this movie, it seemed to have been very clearly made in a different time in filmmaking history, because the story was kind of all over the place. There were larger parts of story that didn't need to be there, and then there was kind of some missing pieces. So it was kind of clunky. The dialogue was good for the most part, but some of it was a little odd. And some of it was dramatically overacted. But I think I kept reminding myself that this movie was made some time ago, and so I had to keep that in mind to be a little less critical, be a little more forgiving, because I didn't want to just be of the attitude that this was the third week in a row that I was just going to hate. So I tried to keep a very open mind. So that was the spirit in which I watched this one. I normally try and keep an open mind, but once you see a movie that's got Nick Cage and John Travolta, then my mind just kind of clamps shut.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this movie is, it's not a perfect movie, but I think it's all heart. There's a lot of heart in this movie. I mean, it hits me in just the right way that lets me overlook some things.
Well, it's a very simple story. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's basically, it's a story about a troubled kid who has to deal with growing up and letting down his defenses and falling in love. And everything else is pretty much just window dressing. But in an interesting character developing way. I mean, I thought that just having the main characters be these guys from Southie with their thick Boston accents and attitudes was fun. I didn't really buy that Robin Williams was also from that neighborhood. He seemed to retain his Marin County accent.
Mm-hmm.
But, everything, you know, it's funny, everything I have to criticize this movie, except that, yeah, I think it was a little hammy in places, is all about the personalities involved in the actual actors and creators of this movie. Like, I don't like Casey Affleck, but he does a fine job in this movie. I just don't like him as a person.
Well, he's not supposed to be likable in his character either, so that works.
No, evidently, most of his lines are ad-libbed, and they hated him for it.
Oh, yeah, he was pulling a Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
Well, did he get the part because he was Ben's little brother?
Undoubtedly.
I'm sure he did.
So, well, then that's where the resentment started, and it had nowhere to go but up.
And Cole Hauser, he got the part because he was in School Ties with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and they thought he was a cool dude.
Yeah, he's also, I believe, if I read correctly, isn't he like the grandson of like one of the Warner Brothers from Warner Brothers?
I did not know that.
His brother is Wings Hauser. But yeah, no, it's funny because, you know, so this is, I guess I can't avoid talking about the making of this movie, because this movie, it's all a beautiful little Cinderella story about these two guys who were going to Harvard and wrote Matt Damon basically wrote a screenplay when he was 25 years old or whatever and sold it for a bunch of money and got to make it and he got to star in it. And it's all great. It's a perfect story. They won Oscars for it. But it's hard to know how much of the story behind this movie is also made right up. Because you hear a lot of different versions of the making of this movie, like little things like they put weird sex scenes in the script to try to catch studios or people that were reading it or who weren't actually reading the whole script and sending it back. But you read enough of those stories and the details are wrong enough that it's like, well, I don't actually believe any of it.
Yeah, there were rumors that Kevin Smith essentially rewrote it.
If my research was correct, and like I said, some of this stuff is a little hard to piece together, but Matt Damon was in his fifth year of Harvard in a playwriting class, and he had to write a one-act play, so he wrote The Bones of This. And with the help of Ben Affleck, they ended up selling this film to Castle Rock for like $600,000 or something. And Castle Rock was Rob Reiner's production company, but Rob Reiner didn't really know what to do with it. It was just kind of sitting there. So Kevin Smith suggested that they go to Harvey Weinstein and try to get the movie done. And Harvey loved it. And because Matt Damon was just cast in The Rainmaker, and so was therefore considered a leading man, and because Robin Williams read the script and liked it, he signed on, so that sort of greenlit the whole thing. Then Harvey Weinstein didn't like Minnie Driver as Skyler because she wasn't cute enough. So another reason to just fuck Harvey Weinstein. Minnie Driver's character's name, Skyler, is named after Matt Damon's one-time girlfriend, Skyler Satinstein? Yeah. She left Matt Damon for
Casey Affleck.
You don't know the answer to this?
Robin Williams?
Oh, it's so much better. Lars Ulrich.
Oh, no.
I think they got married.
Well, she's on the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
Fire bad.
Matt Damon and Minnie Driver, I guess, became romantically involved, blah, blah, blah. They drew from their history because Ben Affleck's father and stepmother were janitors at Harvard. But it was funny because, you know, the characters played by, you know, I mean, Will and Chucky being like the guys from Southie. That's not Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. No. They're the other guys, which maybe makes it more charming.
They did work demo, like in the summers together.
Huh.
But yeah, part of the other story, I guess another part of this story, is that Rob Reiner and William Goldman?
Oh, yes, yes.
See, so Princess Bride, Marathon Man, William Goldman, they suggested rather strongly that they only make the first act of the movie that they had written. Because the original movie that they sold to Castle Rock was more of a political thriller. Will eventually got over his legal troubles and got hired by a government agency and essentially started fighting crimes around the globe. And William Goldman read the script and was like, no, your movie's the first part and should end when he goes after the girl.
Which, by the way, is the right choice.
Oh, absolutely. That other movie sounds dumb.
Well, and they also, I mean, just that fact, and William Golding was really gracious about the whole thing, because people just basically accused him of writing the whole thing. And he's like, no, I didn't write the whole thing. They just gave it to me to look at, and I made some suggestions. Not a big deal. And I'm sure, see, I don't know how the studio system works. I'm sure Castle Rock made money on this movie, too. I'm sure it was like a co-production or something. Or there was a distribution deal or something. I think Castle Rock's name is still on it. Castle Rock and Miramax? I could be wrong. The whole production company thing also baffles me. This, by the way, is the most successful thing Kevin Smith's name has ever been attached to. By far.
It budgeted at $10 million, $140 million gross in the U.S.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And won all those Oscars.
Yeah, one of the rumors is that Ben Affleck was trying to talk Kevin Smith into directing it, and Kevin Smith read it and loved it and said, no, you need a good director.
That would be a smart move by Kevin Smith. Who also, I'm not sure if I like Kevin Smith, actually.
What? What don't you like about Kevin Smith?
Nah, he's just, I don't like his, the wake and bake Kevin Smith. I mean, I'm sure he's happier as a person, I guess, medicating himself that way. But maybe I think it's a little too much of the auteur thing. It's for some reason I don't really like Quentin Tarantino. I mean, I like a lot of what he does, but it's like I wouldn't want to have really anything to do with him personally. Which affects too much of the way I look at the movie. Like I was just telling Drew before we started, Jason, that this movie has baggage, you know? Maybe because I'm kind of like everybody else, kind of watching this whole societal norms around sexual harassment, although sexual harassment is a civil issue, but like more like sexual assault. But you've got Weinstein in this movie. You've got Casey Affleck in this movie.
You've got Ben Affleck in this movie.
And God knows, I mean, who knows? It would not surprise me if any of these characters, if Stellan Skarsgård had something in his past, because that was the way the world was then, which doesn't make it right. It just makes it ugly. And then you got Robin Williams, who I think does a really charming performance and killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think about that too, you know, like the quiet moments in this movie, and you wonder that's why he was such a good actor, is he could draw on those demons that he was himself was having. Or maybe I'm projecting too much, I don't know, because this was before Ben Affleck and Matt Damon had any problems. They were too young Yeah. I mean, this was great. And I think they did a great job. Although, yeah, I think Matt Damon's character was a little, especially when they were doing the World Series talk.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Williams can jump into that crazy animation thing and it works out fine. But, yeah, Matt Damon was having a little trouble with that.
Is this movie the best acting that Ben Affleck's ever done?
I don't think Ben Affleck's a bad actor, but maybe. I mean, I don't know. He was playing Ben Affleck the same sort of Chasing Amy Ben Affleck in the indie movie Ben Affleck of that time. He was playing the sarcastic guy.
Yeah, he had a couple moments that were really good.
He had one good speech at the end, and I thought the speech where he talked about when he was in the job interview was just goofy enough to be funny. Although I definitely thought it was funnier the first time.
Did you see Ben Affleck in, I guess he wasn't in Argo, was he? He was in Argo, wasn't he? He directed it.
He was in Argo.
Yeah, he had a bad haircut. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I thought he was good in that.
He was great in The Town.
He was good in Dogma.
Yeah, no, I think Ben Affleck's a fine actor. Matt Damon is even better.
What other movie? We saw the one where he played the senator. We did it on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, the journalism movie, Say to Play.
Yeah, he was good in that.
Yeah,
some of All Fears, not so much.
I don't even blame him for that.
And then Reindeer Games, you guys did that, right?
No, I haven't seen Reindeer Games.
You haven't done Reindeer? Never mind.
Reindeer Games.
There's everything to recommend it.
We should do that next month.
Yeah, you know what? We might have to because I don't know if I have a copy of Mixed Nuts.
Oh, man.
So we may have to massage the schedule a little bit.
You should be careful saying that around a Weinstein film.
So this plot synopsis will be also courtesy of IMDb because I think they did a good job. It begins, the Will Hunting, Matt Damon, has genius-level intelligence and a talent for memorizing facts, and he solves sophisticated math theorems. He works as a janitor at MIT and lives alone in a sparsely furnished apartment in an impoverished South Boston neighborhood. Turns out he's an abused foster child and blames himself for his unhappy upbringing and turns his self-loathing into a form of self-sabotage in both his professional and emotional lives. Hence, he is unable to maintain either a steady job or a steady romantic relationship. That's a pretty fair encapsulation of an entire movie where we learn all about Will Hunting. It's not presented in the first 5 minutes like that. His friends, his Southie buddies, are Chucky, played by Ben Affleck, Morgan, played by Casey Affleck, and Billy, played by Cole Hauser. And then we go off and we meet Professor Gerald Lambeau, played by Stellan Skarsgård, who we know from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Hunt for Red October.
And Ronan.
Oh, he has been in a bunch of stuff.
And the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh, yeah. And Thor. And Thor 2.
And the Avengers.
Yeah. So, he's a very impressive mathematician, and he leaves a some sort of math problem, like a proof for his students to try to figure out.
Also, he is super skeevy.
Yes. Yeah, he is completely skeevy.
That was a trait that Stellan Skarsgård brought to the role.
Oh, excellent.
That was his idea.
It seems about right, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was always, like, hitting on his female students. Seems like a very college professor sort of thing to do. So, blah, blah, blah. Will the janitor solves this theorem using his incredible smarts?
Anonymously.
Anonymously, yes. And then we see a fight between, and there's lots of cool banter between the Southie guys. I mean, I don't want to yada yada that because it is pretty fun. Like the whole Casey Affleck kind of hamming it up and Ben Affleck yelling at him. Actually works really well. And Cole Hauser appeared to, like, it almost looked like he was intentionally trying to hide his face, like the neighbor from Home Improvement.
That was another actor's choice there. He was talking with Affleck and Damon and said, you know, there's always one member of the group who's always like really quiet, but just kind of always there. And he wanted to be that guy. So he gave most of his lines to Morgan, played by Casey Affleck.
Was Casey Affleck well thought of in this movie? I mean, I heard the story that that they were kind of tired of him ad-libbing a bunch of stuff. But was he as pesky as he seemed to have been?
This was only, I think, the second movie I'd ever seen him in. He was in, To Die For, right? Also directed by Gus Van Sant?
I don't know. Makes sense. I haven't seen a bunch of Gus Van Sant movies, as it turns out. Like, I've never seen My Own Private Idaho.
You've seen Psycho.
You know what? I've never seen that version of Psycho all the way through.
Doesn't matter. You've still seen it.
Yeah, I have. Every scene I've seen. What is Elephant? And what else did he do? He did a bunch of stuff. He was fine. I mean, he did a good job with his movie.
He did Milk.
Yeah.
Milk was good.
Anyway, so Will and his buddies end up fighting a guy who bullied Will in kindergarten, but was also picking on a girl. And so they went all sharks and jets on him.
Yeah, that was sort of establishing, you know, what they are. They're sort of ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
I mean, they were getting drunk at a Little League game.
Yes.
And then they decided to pick a fight in broad daylight.
Did elements of this movie remind you of Beautiful Girls?
Yeah, sort of. Like if Beautiful Girls was the 10-year reunion of these guys?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I can see that. And Casey Affleck would have been the one hitting on the 10-year-old neighbor girl?
Pretty much, yeah. Or he'd just crawl in bed with her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's actually, Will is arrested for beating the crap out of this guy. And he has a long rap sheet.
Well, yeah, and when the cops grab him, he decides to knee one of the cops in the groin.
Yeah, there's that. Don't do that. That's a party foul, at least. The professor finds out, there's a scene where Will is trying to solve because somebody solved anonymously that first proof, and then they put another problem on the chalkboard that took he and his colleagues like 2 years to figure out, and they catch Will trying to kind of piece it together.
Well, they think he's vandalizing the board.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't possibly be that smart because he's just a lackey janitor dude.
Exactly. And these guys wear scarves all the time. They're mathematicians and professors.
Just Lambo.
Yeah.
He's that kind of douchebag.
He wants to be Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there we go. We also have that meet cute in the bar, where definitely a writerly scene in the bar.
Yes, very much so.
Which is fine, though. It's cute. It works out. It, you know, Damon gets to show off his acting chops. And the guy with the horrible 80s hair and the much more punchable face. Although, I don't know, a lot of people in this movie had punchable faces.
He looked like a young Alexander Gudinov from The Money Pit?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
He had a long run on the TV show Oz.
Oh, excellent.
Where he played the convict brother of the dude who plays Mayhem in the insurance commercials.
Oh, Liz Lemon's boyfriend.
Sure.
It's all very connected.
Mm-hmm. They never seen 30 Rock?
I have not.
Not a single episode.
Oh, man. 30 Rock is great.
Is it on Hulu?
It was on Netflix for a long time, so I don't know.
Yeah, so, Jason, how did you react to the how do you like them apples scene? Because 20 years ago, it was quite original and hilarious, but now it's so cliched.
I chuckled. It has not cliched out with me. So
okay.
It's not a common vernacular in my presence.
I worry that somebody watching this movie now would just like roll their eyes and be like, come on.
No, I didn't have any of those moments, and I didn't have any overwhelming sense of the movie being too dated, especially because throughout the movie, none of them have modern cars anyway, so you just assume they're all shit boxes because they're all poor. So that was good. So you're not burdened by seeing a vehicle and just immediately pulling yourself out of the time. So no, it all worked for me, that part.
It's a timeless story.
I thought Chucky's pickup game at the bar was hilarious.
Oh yeah.
Just go invade their personal space until they they make contact with him. And then he can act like they're the ones that initiated the conversation.
It's cringy, yeah, but it doesn't last long enough to be super cringy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turns out Chucky's not the bad guy. It's the other guy who tries to show Chucky up who's the bad guy. Who gets taken down. But, yeah, so that's where he gets Minnie Driver's phone number. And she's got a clever line. And this was pretty much her breakout in America, right? She was in Circle of Friends before.
Yeah.
And then she later starred in Will and Grace. So it's must-see TV.
We just watched her in an episode of Absolutely Fabulous.
We also saw her in that Bond movie.
Oh, that's true.
And Gross Point Blank.
Oh, she's great.
One of the reasons I had such a problem with how that Gross Point Blank treated Minnie Driver is because I liked her so much from this movie that I thought she deserved better.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
I liked the fact that they embraced her non-American English accent.
Yeah, I love that. They didn't try and make her do an American accent, which is right. Great.
And they solved a lot of problems with saying, yeah, she was from inherited money, but that's fine. It's not an issue. This isn't a movie about money. It's not even really a movie about class. They didn't really dig into that.
Yeah, it's funny that they didn't do master exposition of that, but they did plenty of master exposition and other stuff that wasn't necessary.
Such as?
They went on and on about Will's bad acts and prior behavior. And they went on and on about the professor's bad blood between them and the history. And that was all, it just didn't matter. It didn't really lend itself much more to the story.
Well, I think it was when we get into that part of the story, I think it's necessary because you think this movie is about Will, but it turns out it's just as much as about Sean Maguire, played by Robin Williams, and Lambeau, played by Skarsgård.
Yeah, but I don't think you needed the huge amount of crap that they tried to shove in there. I think it could have been a little more streamlined and still would have kept the tension.
Like one dramatic dialogue too many between them?
Yeah, there was too much that was, it to me, it was overwritten and overacted. It could have been a little simpler.
Well, okay, so Skarsgård, not Sarsgaard, turns out those are two different people, just like Dorf and Dorif. Yeah, so his character, the professor, sees like a mathematical prodigy in a Will. Anyway, so the math professor's like, yeah, okay, this guy is like, he's got talents. He's got these amazing mathematical talents, which, by the way, that whole thing is sort of lost on me. Since I don't have those kind of talents, I don't even understand necessarily why he would want to spend 2 years working on this mathematical problem, but oh well. So he wants to take this kid under his wing and basically mentor him into being the next great whoever. And you get that conflict between like he's already got his assistant or whatever, his toady, who is jealous of Will. Yeah. And that's sort of uncomfortable, but in an interesting way. And then he's got his friend Sean, who teaches at a community college, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like some kind of like savage. And is all burnt out because he's got a dead wife. So you have like the battle between like Will and himself, but then you have the battle between, you know, Sean as an advocate for Will having his own agency, and Skarsgård, Lambeau, for, you know, wanting to take his raw talent and put it to where he thinks it should go. And I think that's worth exploring, right? I mean, I thought that was a good part of the story. If it was just a linear following of Will along, I think I would have been completely bored with it pretty quickly. Or there would have had to be more hijinks between he and Minnie Driver.
Yeah, no, I like the progression. Sort of the relationship between Lambeau and Sean sort of comes to a boiling point right in parallel as Sean is trying to break through with Will and sort of reaching an impasse. And it's the fact that Will overhears their relationship erupting into an argument that spans decades because they can't agree on how what's best for Will. You know, that's what sort of breaks down his final defenses for Sean. So I think that is an important element of the movie that needed to be set up a little bit. And maybe they had one too many scenes about it, but I did think it was important.
Well, and so Lambeau basically gets Will sprung out of jail with the part of the terms of conditions of his release is that he meets with a psychologist once a week. So Lambeau sets him up with all these psychologists, including George Plimpton, which is sort of funny, until he gets to Sean, Robin Williams, who he's from South Boston, and he's got, he doesn't put up with bullshit. That's kind of his thing. And he calls the guy sport in chief a lot, which irritated me, but oh well. Guessing that was a choice that Robin Williams made. And Robin Williams went to Juilliard. He's no stranger to, you know, like professors and college life and everything. So in this background, we have Will, who's being very, very clever, because that's what he does, but doesn't know shit about shit, which is what Robin Williams' character is there to tell him. And they start off with their relationship with a threat of violence, showing that Sean is not to be trifled with.
Yeah, on the commentary, Matt Damon talks about how he didn't know what was going on with Robin Williams, but when they're shooting that scene, he was in a really dark place, and he was grabbing his throat for real. And they had to do about 10 takes of it. And he said in the take they used, you can see the makeup on his neck is wearing off, and you can see where he's got welts from Robin Williams grabbing him so hard in previous takes.
Oh, man.
Again, that's the thing about Robin Williams, is that since you know how it's going to end for him, when he's doing this, like deep hurtful acting, it's like, oh, this is too real, man.
Yeah, it was also his choice to like slowly take off his glasses before he did it.
The wind up for the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
The like long slow burn.
I will,
it's like taking off your taking off your jewelry because you know you're about to get into a fight.
Yeah. So we have the story about the Red Sox 1975 World Series with Carlton Fisk, Pudge.
Yeah, that scene does not hold up well. Also, Will's thing about caramels, that made me roll my eyes a little bit. I was like, okay, now you guys are just being masturbatory.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, we know you wrote it. We know you think you're clever.
Yeah. And it's a clever thought, but it really was shoehorned in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, without the whole magic trick, the little funny novelty shop scene was kind of cute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought all of the scenes between Skyler and Will were cute.
Yeah, I like how much agency they gave her character and about how she was serious about her schooling. And while she was kind of amused by how smart Will was, that wasn't the most important thing to her, and she was not going to exploit his intelligence for her gain because she wanted to learn things herself.
Yeah, she was in school to learn. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, so Lambeau is pretty much making sure that Will keeps going or gets ready to go to these job interviews because he could make a lot of money. Will is pushing back on that because that's what he does. He pushes back against things.
Yeah, Will just wants to hang out and do demo with Chucky.
Yeah. Yeah, his dream, and later they have a dialogue about that.
That's an honest living.
Yeah, they're going to have the houses next to each other and their kids are going to play together. Well, they sit in the porch and drink beer. Which, by the way, I think the most powerful part of this movie for me isn't necessarily the Robin Williams stuff where he gives Will the, you know, like the ability to forgive himself. And that's where Dougie has to tell me that Drew slips in that it's not your fault line now and then.
Yeah, when the first time I watched this movie, when I was much younger than I am now, it was that scene that sort of wrecked me when I watched the movie. But nowadays, when I watch it, it's the Chucky Will scene.
Exactly.
That really hits me hard in a way that it didn't when I was younger. Probably because I was way more of an asshole back then.
Well, it's just different places, different things. Mm-hmm. Brother Jay? Which do you think was more powerful?
Well, I mean, for me, it was the Chucky Will scene. Because it was more something I could identify with.
Yeah. And I also think it was, you can kind of see the Robin Williams scene, the it's not your fault. You can see it coming. I mean, you don't know how it's going to play out, but you can see it coming. And I thought the Chucky speech sort of came out of nowhere, but it was earned.
Well, and I think for me the other scene was so it was, first of all, it was too long. It had no need to be as long as it was, and as repetitive and redundant as it was. So it lost its effectiveness and just became almost cheesy at the end. So it was kind of overkill, in my opinion.
The it's not your fault. Speech.
The repetition.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Plus Matt Damon cries funny, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was the hardest stretch, I think, in the movie, was when he was laughing too hard and then crying too hard.
Yeah.
Well, the laughing was real, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is he's a weird guy, so.
Yeah. Well, and maybe it's a young actor thing. You know, maybe it was just Matt Damon wasn't quite skilled as he is later in life, which is fine. I'm not necessarily criticizing his performance. I'm just the material, I think, was just, I think it could have been polished.
Well, and okay, so you criticized the Lambeau Sean things. I mean, well, I forced you into a couple dialogues too much, so maybe I shouldn't put this on you, but you could have like taken out of you could have cut the bar scene, the scene of the two of them in the bar, except that mm-hmm. I think it was one of the best scenes in the movie because
the Unabomber scene.
Yeah, because it ends on the Unabomber joke, which is great, but it's fun dialogue, and also you've got that guy in the bar. Is he also named Morgan?
I don't remember.
I think he is. Like, basically, he's the analog. I mean, this is their version of the Southie guys. So, I thought that was fun. I quite enjoyed that.
And I think it was a good scene. I just think it was overwritten and overacted. I think you could have made it a little bit of a tighter scene. That's my criticism. I mean, not that I'm a good writer or anything. I'm just saying.
You would have made this an 87-minute movie.
I would have made it a little shorter. Yeah. Not quite 87
That's
minutes,
unfair. But this is a 2-hour and 8-minute movie, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think this is overly long at all.
Oh, no, neither.
There were a couple times in the movie where Matt Damon couldn't help but laugh for real. One time was the Sean story about his wife farting in her sleep. That was an ad lib by Robin Williams. And So that was Matt Damon laughing for real, and Gus Van Sant kept that in. The other scene was when after Will broke up with Skylar, and then I don't remember if it was before, right before or right after he had his fight with Sean, where Sean kicked him out of the session. And he's sort of sitting at Chucky's family table, and he's supposed to be looking all morose and sad and contemplative. And then Casey Affleck comes down after pretending to be upstairs masturbating, but he's holding a baseball mitt, which was not scripted. That was just a Casey Affleck ad lib, and Ben Affleck went along with it, and so they got going on the whole, "Why are you using my glove, riff?" And so that's when Matt Damon started cracking up another time.
That's funny. And see, those are funny moments. I mean, I know why they kept those, because those are kind of charming. Because you don't want Casey Affleck's character to be any more than that. He cannot be a bigger part of this movie. It just would not work. But having, you know, that little aside takes some of the tension away.
Yeah, there was another. Oh, the joke telling scene when Will takes Skylar to meet his friends. That was actually Gus Van Sant's fault, because Van Sant told Casey Affleck, no matter what Ben does, when he's telling his joke, just interrupt him as many times as you can.
Oh, that's funny.
So that was Ben Affleck, like, really getting annoyed when he's like, "Shut the fuck up and let me finish," which I think worked very well.
Do you ever listen to a podcast called The Doughboys?
Nope.
Nope.
It's Mike Mitchell and Nick Weiger, and they have a podcast where they review fast food places. Like, they'll take a guest and they'll review. I don't think they've actually done McDonald's, but they've done like Carl's Jr. and they've done like a whole bunch. I mean, there's probably well over like 100 episodes or whatever. So there's plenty of different restaurants they've done. They've done Wendy's. They've done a bunch of stuff like that. And it's sort of funny because, first of all, Mike Mitchell is from Boston. And so he says things like hot dog and popcorn. And he and Nick Weiger together are a little bit like Chucky and Morgan. They're like sniping at each other in the middle of telling a story. And you think that, A, they're both going to die because this podcast of eating fast food is going to kill them. And B, there were times where they actually like had legitimate fights. They broke. So much so that like the next week they had to come on and apologize, but they are constantly threatening to just end the show. It's just kind of fun. So it reminded me of that scene. And I think Minnie Driver did a funny, you know, she did fun with her joke.
Mm-hmm. It's very funny.
Yeah.
So Doughboys. Arby's with John Hodgman. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to.
Arby's with John Hodgman. That is a good episode.
I will subscribe to this right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I would recommend against, unless you fall in love with the podcast, which, you know, do your thing. But I would suggest John Hodgman is a good guest. I would not suggest anything that talks about, is it Rocktober? Or, I know it, Munch Madness. They tried to do this tournament 2 years in a row, and both of it crumbled, and they got really angry with each other by the third week of whatever the month they were doing.
Hey, they went to a Shakey's.
Oh, yeah.
I'm only gonna download the episodes of places I would actually care about.
I don't know. There's one of the first several episodes, they do a place called Caro's.
Mm-hmm. Caro's. There used to be Caro's here in Oregon.
Yeah. It was the restaurant where I think they gave the lowest number of fork ratings. It was awful.
Okay.
Yeah.
I miss Caro's. The Sizzler right by my house closed.
For a Sizzler episode, you need to download.
I'm downloading it already.
Well, you should also download Lady to Lady. The podcast Lady to Lady, where they take French Stewart to the Sizzler.
Oh, God.
Because one of French them is Stewart of French Stewart.
Third Rock fame?
Yes. And Mom fame. Now he's on Mom, or at least he guested on Mom a couple times.
Early on, right? He was
Maybe so. He was the boss.
He was the chef?
Yeah. Before Kevin Pollak was on the thing. Anyway, I like that
show. You know, that show was underrated.
What's that? Third Rock?
Third Rock
from
the
Sun. Third Rock is hilarious.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mom.
Yeah. No, Mom is appropriately rated.
Not Our Mother.
Oh, no. Our Mother is underrated for sure. Show. So anyway, we get the whole thing where Will interviews. I thought it was a nice way. You know, again, this is like a whole subplot or a second part of the movie where he's going to join like the NSA or whatever. But I like the way they took the story and had him interview with it and then transition from his really being in the interview to his recounting the interview. Mm-hmm. That was fun. It was a clever piece of business.
Now, did he really have the interview, or was that just his fantasy and he was just snowing on the...
Yeah, I don't know. Good question. Seems like those were probably his real thoughts, but yeah. Was he playing for Sean's benefit?
He did a lot of improv.
Yeah.
So.
Because that was his defense.
And as we experienced with Skylar, he was pretty good at lying.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had a pretty good memory, because he could make up 12 brothers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that was another bit of fun reality when they were at the dog track. Minnie Driver actually bet on the races, and her dog won. So that was her genuine reaction.
That's pretty awesome.
She was pretty excited.
So pretty much the movie just, you know, we got the breakup between Skylar and Will, because that's what he does.
Mm-hmm. Because she wanted him to go out to California with her.
Yeah.
And he could not handle it.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems like, you know, his world was fine. He could be bitter about, you know, bitter and noble about his lowly place because he fashioned it for himself. Mm-hmm. But Sean pushed him to do better things.
So did Chucky.
Exactly. Yeah. Because without Chucky, there would have been no different ending or whatever. I guess there's some more. I put in a section of my notes is trivia / apocrypha, because I don't believe any of it. But Gus Van Sant, I guess, asked Matt Damon and Ben Affleck to rewrite the script so that Chucky is killed in a construction accident. And I guess they didn't like it, but they rewrote it anyway. And then after he read it, he's like, no, you're right. This isn't a good idea.
Yeah, the movie had enough darkness. It didn't need to be just morose.
Well, that's the thing, is that you need something to get Will off the schneid. And so you could have had something dramatic and horrible like the construction accident that kills his best friend. Or you could have a much more artful way of having his best friend tell him, no, you've got to go do this shit.
Because otherwise you're a coward.
It was more real world.
Exactly, yeah. But... okay, there's two things about this movie that I really did have a bone to pick, specifically with you, Drew. I want you to justify any of the music in this movie.
Oh.
The Elliot Smith?
This is some bullshit twee college music.
That was perfect in 1997.
It's a Danny Elfman.
Afternoon Delight.
No, that's terrible. There's no defending that. Yeah. No, I think the Elliot Smith music was... perfectly fine. I thought it fit the tone of the movie.
I mean, I guess it could have been worse. It could have been Simon and Garfunkel.
Might as well have been The Cure.
I like Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Morrissey.
But it's just a little on the nose, is what I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe that's what this movie is. Maybe this movie is a little bit twee.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's a melodrama.
I don't think we saw any scissors.
I mean, but you know, the story of Elliot Smith is also really dark.
Yeah, did he kill himself with scissors, or what happened to him?
He committed suicide by stabbing himself in his heart.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Ouch.
So I felt old today when I looked at the news and I found that emo rapper Lil Peep overdosed. It was a tragedy. I'm like, what? What is that? I have no idea. And then I saw a picture. I'm like, oh, no, this society is no worse off. Because it turns out I judge myself. All right. Sorry. I judge people on their face tattoos. Perhaps harshly.
Well, there goes your Christmas present.
You bought him a little Peep album, too?
No, I bought him a session for a face tattoo. Oh. So he can get a tribal right on his forehead.
You think you can improve this? I don't think so.
Not improve, augment.
Okay. Yeah.
Flourish. It's a flourish.
What can help? More beard. That's about longer bangs.
I would laugh so hard if you got Eric tattooed across your neck. Great. Giant gothic letters.
Yeah. No, what I'll do is I'll shave my eyebrow and write Eric as one of the eyebrows.
$100.
No.
$200.
I wouldn't shave my eyebrow for $100. Nice try. So, Brother Drew, do we have more case to make about Good Will Hunting?
I don't think I need to make more of a case, but no, I think the movie holds up really well. Some of the scenes are showing a little bit, but I think the big moments still hit the way they were intended to. I think the Chucky Will scene at the demo site gets stronger over time, or maybe as I age. But I think the Sean Will, the It's Not Your Fault scene, I think that's still a really good scene. I know it didn't hit home with Jason as much, but I thought the way Robin Williams did it, you know, he's saying something different every time he says it's not your fault.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's still really effective. And I like the way the friendships in the movie are portrayed. They seem really, really genuine. You know, the scene where they give Will a car at the end, I think, is also pretty emotional. Even if maybe it wasn't intended to be.
Even though it was a Nova.
that makes it even better.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. Yeah. No, you know what? I agree. I like the characters a lot. I thought the story was pretty evergreen. I think it's going to hold up in another 20 years. We'll find out. The episode 1209, Good Will Hunting 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Hunting Party.
Hunting Party, yes. Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
I'd give it probably a B minus.
Yeah, I can see that being fair too.
I mean, it wasn't, like I said, it was a good movie. I mean, it kept me entertained, and I didn't feel that it was dated and the dialogue and yada yada. So, you know, it was certainly better than the last two movies for me. But the one thing that I had a problem with was the little fly lens opening.
Oh, the kaleidoscope.
Yeah. Effect. That was really just kind of, I don't know. That was probably the only thing that I really was like, I didn't appreciate that as an artistic choice.
Okay. I can think of something that might have made the movie a little bit better for you. Okay. Let's say after the Unabomber thing in the bar, right there at the bar with between Lambeau and Martin, okay. If Stellan Skarsgård leaned over and said to Sean, you know, the boy is so talented, he can do, but the first thing I want to do is take his face off. Take his face off. His face off.
You want to take his face off.
His face
and then off. And then he should rub his hand over his face in an up and down fashion, like a fountain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's what Sean does when he's saying, it's not your fault. Tenderly rubbing Will's face.
That's creepy.
Yeah, very nice. So, okay, shall we move on to a new segment?
I'm really excited that we have a new segment.
We have a new segment. It's a new segment. Segment is Dougie Digs It. It's from listener Dougie. And we had asked him for recommendations from across the pond. And I have a recommendation to read. If you'll bear with me. Unless you want to read it, Jason. Who has the best English/Scottish accent?
Pretty sure it's you.
Yeah, I'm not even going to insult our esteemed contributor, nay, listener, Dougie, by faking an accent.
Well, okay, you know I will, but the thing is...
Oh, please don't.
The thing is, I just started listening to a podcast, and I run into a super big stumble here. And I guess I should have asked him before I started to do the first Dougie Digs It. Eventually, I think this will end up being in Doug's voice. But for this episode, I will just read the email. But the podcast in question, I think, is called The Scottish Tapes. And one of the episodes starts with one of the characters talking to his friend saying, "Hey, Doogie!" And I thought, oh shit, what if his name is Doogie instead of Dougie?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's like, then we have to change it to Doogie Digs It, which is just as good, but a different theme song. But anyway, so.
Well, he will correct us.
Yes, I hope he will.
Although comedically, it would be hilarious if he just spells it, "I pronounce it Doogie," and then puts another line and says, "but it's pronounced Doogie." He just spells it the same way. You'd have no way of knowing which was which.
Yeah, okay.
Or maybe our hilarious American accents are super charming when we say Dougie.
Yeah, there's that. Okay, so.
Dougie digs it. Dougie digs it. Dougie digs it.
So you asked for recommendations from across the pond, and you were perhaps hoping I would reveal some obscure British or European-made masterpiece that you hadn't been aware of. Well, assuming I'm going to keep this type of contribution, then I'll certainly try to highlight some of films and TV from over here. And I'd also like to give an overview of some things from over here that I feel have been overlooked or underappreciated. However, for this week's contribution, I would like to shine the spotlight on a British-made marvel that I suspect isn't well-known in the States, as it's something that hasn't had the exposure it deserves over here. So what have I come up with? A film? A TV show? Perhaps a book or a band? Nope. I'm going to be incredibly random and bring you a man. Andrew O'Neill. No need to get excited, boyfriend Jesse. You're not being replaced. I'm not bringing an actual man. Andrew O'Neill is primarily known as a comedian. A cult and occult comedian at that. You can check out some of his material on YouTube. I'd particularly recommend the show Occult Comedian. His humor may seem a little abstract and random at times, but it works for me. He's also the guitarist for a steampunk band, The Men That Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing. As Andrew explains himself, if you don't know what steampunk music is, don't worry about it, it isn't a thing. To my mind, the music is best described as punk meets Chaz and Dave, which probably doesn't even translate particularly well, as I'm guessing you don't know Chaz and Dave. But never mind that, they rocked, they're hilarious, and they're even educational. They have a lot of material available on YouTube, but you have to check out the following three tracks. This House Is Not Haunted, Poor Georgie, and Brunel. It'll give you a broad idea of what they're like. But Andrew is also a massive fan of heavy metal. Now, I know the brothers enjoy their music, and you had previously jokingly referenced doing a Metallica music episode to see if Lars would try to sue you, but I'm not sure where you stand on heavy metal. Warning. Please don't stand on heavy metal. Heavy metal is an enormous flaming beast and will destroy you if you even think about standing on it. If you have an interest in the heavier side of rock, or even just an interest in music history in general, I would recommend Andrew O'Neill's book, A History of Heavy Metal. It covers the evolution of metal from the blues, Robert Johnson, Blind Lemon, Jefferson, etc., through early rock and roll, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, onto 60s with the Beatles and Stones, then to proto-metal of the Kinks, Led Zepp, and finally, the whole thing really kicks off properly with Black Sabbath. Then you have various chapters dedicated to different phases and subgenres of metal, like the new wave British heavy metal, black metal, thrash, glam, hair, death, grunge. It concludes with opinions on the current state and future of metal. As a side note, he puts that black metal is not his favorite subgenre, but the story of the second wave black metal in Norway is fascinating and terrifying. If you don't know anything about it and can't be bothered with this book, then just take a look at the trailer for the documentary Until the Light Takes Us for a brief idea of what went on. You can also get most of the info on the wiki that we'll add here. And if you're really twisted, I mean interested, it's covered in much more detail in the book Lords of Chaos by Michael Moynihan. I enjoy most music. No, Brother Jay, that still doesn't include Wham, and I remain to be convinced that is music. From classical to hardcore punk and pretty much anything in between, but in general, my default is rock, and within the sweet spot is rock and metal bands' albums from around 85 to 95. so I'm predisposed to finding this a fascinating read. But because Andrew is so passionate and knowledgeable on the subject, I feel the book would still be entertaining even if you only have a passing interest in the genre. The book actually evolved from a stand-up comedy show, so it's funny too. I was fortunate enough to see Andrew perform 3 times during this year's Edinburgh Festival. He was primarily there performing his new show, Black Magic Fun Hour, but also did a one-off The Men That Will Not Be Blamed show and a few A History of Heavy Metal shows. I was able to buy a copy of the book from him at the last of these shows, so my experience is partly based on seeing the show and partly reading the book. Having listened to the sample of the audiobook, I suspect this will be the best way to replicate the experience, as it allows the listener to fully appreciate his comic tone, which otherwise might not translate as well if you're not familiar with his comedy routines. So there I have it, my first attempt at recommending something. Although I carry a fair amount of physical weight, I realize my opinions don't, but at least I've been able to provide links to some free material so you can decide for yourself. I'll just add that both Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore are fans of Mr. O'Neill's work, which is as good a recommendation as I can think to close with. Now, I did a horrible job of reading that. I apologize.
Yeah, I think if you'd done it in an accent, maybe you would have done better. You want to try it again from the top?
Yeah, there we go. So there is a little more context about his. He was starting to think of his top 10 list of bands. And he said there wasn't anything particularly heavy and nothing specific to 85 to 95. However, a quick top 10 list of albums has 5 metal bands and 4 from the period. And there's only 4 bands in his top 10 list that have featured it in the top 10 albums. So the difference has got him thinking, if I was to come up with another couple of top 10 lists, one for songs, one for live performances, how much would overlap? I think I need to spend more time thinking about this and redefining my list, but I think a top 10 music podcast episode has the potential to be very interesting. Perhaps a special Christmas music episode, and maybe save that for a 4th year anniversary, episode 250 or 300. Actually, maybe save it for episode 500. Okay, now I'm just trying to force you to keep going to episode 500 and beyond. So, he's going to look at more top 10 lists, I think inspired by Drew's crazy Will Hunting mathematical movie things, statistics.
That is very flattering. Thank you.
So, Dougie digs it.
Yeah! Hey, I bought a bus and I painted it black, and now the bus gets hot in the summer. Hot bus, why did you paint the bus black? Hot bus, I just had a lot of black paint. Hot bus, have you come to regret that decision? Hot bus, yes, particularly when it's sunny! Thank you very much, thank you. Thank you, a lovely song there to get us going. A song about regret. Are you well? Yeah. Good, what the fuck are you wearing? Weirdo. So good evening, give me a shout if you're a man. Give me a shout if you're a woman. Give me a shout if you're having an operation to change that state of affairs. There's always loads. It's amazing the noises they come up with as well. You usually get a bloke in the back going, suggesting that's the noise transsexuals make. Then if they're suggesting the operation is taking place there and then, which would be unhygienic. Who's drinking? I will be drinking throughout my show. It's not very professional of me, I'm aware of that, but I do have a genetic condition whereby my body doesn't produce its own booze. So I'm forced to take a supplement. So, fundamentalist Muslim lady ninja, how do you know which are your work clothes? Good evening. It's 20 to 2 in the morning. Who's still alive? Yeah. Say yeah. In the word of the liar Jehovah. Surprisingly good from over there. Fuck yeah. I'll teach it the rest of you the words will bring the church down by repeating chants, which is how they started it. Oh, I see. So you're intelligent, you're just fucking tired. All right, that makes sense. So you may well have noticed by this point in the show I am dressed a bit like a girl. The reason I'm dressed a bit like a girl is I'm a transvestite, and that is the minimum requirement. Do you have to do the dressing up thing, otherwise it doesn't count. I've used the word transvestite there just so that you know what I'm talking about. I don't really like the word transvestite. It's a bit loaded, has a lot of negative connotations. I prefer the term gender spastic. That's what I prefer. Now, people assume I'm gay because I cross-dress. I'm not gay. I'm actually kind of ridiculously heterosexual. So, ladies, if you're bored of knowing where your clothes are, sort of like the gay best friend you can fuck, basically. The gok one you can take home, if you like. I'll have a gossip, share a bottle of wine, then I'll take you roughly up the shops. Now, oh, my milkman is a Satanist, that's why. He only sells goat's milk, he dyes it black with black food colouring. He's gone out of business. Now, they say you can't hitchhike anymore, don't they? They say you can't hitchhike anymore, don't they? They say you can't hitchhike anymore, don't they? They say it's too dangerous, they say it's too dangerous, it's too dangerous. You'll be bummed to death. Now, I've done a lot of hitchhiking in my time, ladies and gents. I'm proud to announce I've never been bummed to death. I mean, I've been bummed, of course. I mean, I'm not a Mormon. But it's never been fatal. It's never been against my will. They've tried, don't get me wrong. They've battered away at it. You don't hitchhike looking this pretty without some attempts, but they're on a hiding to nothing, ladies and gents, because I'm proud to announce tonight that I'll have the tightest ring piece known to medical science. But like trying to push a sausage through a polo mint. Like trying to get a V2 rocket in the dolphin's blowhole. It's just like trying to microwave a whole tiger. Like Henry VIII trying to hide in a hotel room fridge. Like trying to put a condom on a warship. But like trying to post that warship. But like the elephant man trying to put on a swimming cap. Everybody's been so kind, but I shall forego swimming for today because it is a private member's pool and the rules of the pool clearly state that one must wear a swimming cap. Like that. I'm like trying to get a 1.5-inch audio jack into a 3/4-inch audio socket. Like Joe Pesci. Like a swan using a pita bread as a sort of makeshift sleeping bag. Like a wolf in a Smarties tube. Be like Jordan in a training bra. Be like like trying to get a thing inside something that's too small to accommodate it. Like, entire population of China all go and see Billy Elliot, the stage musical, on the same night. Sort of small regional theatre. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to put on a child's wetsuit. And then trying to write his full name out on the back of a postage stamp. Using a really thick marker pen. Be like stretching out one single idea. Far beyond. And it's still funny. Yes, my name is Andrew Neil. I'm doing a show at 7:30 at The Pony, which is a club which you will not know unless you think back to when you couldn't find anywhere else to drink. And then he went, oh, The Pony! Oh, that's where we ended up. It's the place where you ended up. Come and see me. You've been surprisingly delightful, considering it's fucking 1:45 in the fucking morning. Goodbye.
Andrew O'Neill, if you go to Audible, if you're a member of audible.com, you can get a free 21-minute interview with him. You cannot get his book, The History of Heavy Metal. yet. It's available in Australia and probably the UK, but not in America. I wish it was, though, because, yeah, he does seem, just from the interview, where the interviewer's questions were pretty basic, sort of like junket questions. But he did a really job, you know, answering passionately about what he obviously likes. Just heavy metal music.
Can you get his physical book?
Yes, I'm sure you can get his physical book. As well as, I think I've already talked about Until the Light Takes Us, but it is a really good documentary. It talks about that whole scene. In fact, the last podcast on the left did a, I think, 3-part episode on Norwegian black metal. And they go into that whole thing because it ended in a whole bunch of church fires, church arsons, and a couple of homicides.
Yikes.
Yeah. And one of the guys, he was convicted of murder and spent the maximum time you can spend in a Norwegian jail, which I believe is 21 years. And now he's a free man and still an asshole. And yeah, black metal is not my favorite music, but there's plenty of heavy metal that I'd love to talk about heavy metal. So, Andrew O'Neill, Dougie, I think you'll need to actually send us an audio of some kind doing it, because my delivery was not up to par, I don't think.
And it's worth mentioning that that was just an excerpt of an amazing email that Dougie sent us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Dougie he listens to the show. Thank you for paying attention. It's awesome. It makes this whole thing worthwhile, or even more worthwhile, maybe. I think it'd be worthwhile anyway. Turns out I like talking to these guys, my brothers. And as Drew pointed out, after saying that Boogie Nights was a big sort of a slog for me to get through, kind of a lot of hard work, I couldn't stop raving about how much I liked every scene we talked about.
Yeah, that was an interesting listen once you had the podcast all put together.
Well, because, yeah, it turns out, after having these discussions, my opinion will change. So, any other segments? Any housekeeping?
I've got a couple short ones. I forget. Did I talk about Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology last week?
Nope. You mentioned you were having a little trouble with the audiobook of Good Omens.
Oh, yeah. Still am. Yeah. So, I listened to Norse mythology by Neil Gaiman. It was super interesting. I've been interested in Norse mythology since I used to read the Thor comic book. And he did a really good job of sort of collecting all of the historical tales that make up Norse mythology and compiling them into sort of one narrative told in his rather unique voice. So it's pretty funny and entertaining, but it touches on all of the big stories, you know, from the creation of the world to the end of the world as Ragnarok. And yeah, I really recommend it. It was super interesting and very funny to hear how some of the colloquialisms came from really bonkers stories that people made up to try and explain things that they couldn't understand.
Did you listen to the book or read the book?
I listened to it.
And was he reading it?
I believe he was, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, he's a good reader, as it turns out. As well as a good writer.
Yeah. So, that's a recommendation from me. I went offshore yesterday, so I survived 4 more helicopter trips.
That's excellent. That's always a good thing. Anytime you land a dry and a one piece, it's a good deal.
Indeed. Oh, and I got a new version of a Mustang suit, which was much easier to put on, so I did not have to herniate a disc just to get in and out of it every time we flew.
Oh, sweet.
I know that that's not interesting to anybody, but it made me really happy.
No, it's important.
But, yeah, that's about all the housekeeping I have.
Sweet. The only housekeeping I have is actually, I'm still not really in the market to buy a car yet, but I'm kind of looking now, and I think I've moved away from the Nissan Juke. And the more times we get pictures of Postman Pat from Dougie, I'm thinking maybe the Kia Soul is not really the way to go, but yeah, I don't really know. I really like our Escape. So see, I think I need something a little different than that, but a little smaller is maybe not the way to go.
Why would you need something different?
Two Escapes seem silly.
Why? You had an Explorer in Escape before.
Yeah, the Explorer is bigger, though. You could do more things with the Explorer.
Well, you could look at Explorers, but they're going to be more expensive.
They'd be way more expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
You could get matching vanity plates.
We could, yeah.
His and hers?
Like two moist and three moist.
Ew. I don't think you want, because who's going to have the two moist one?
No, two moist is already taken. I love three moist. That's hilarious. Okay, so your tale.
Housekeeping. My internet service provider, who is a major conglomeration, we'll call them
Schmomcast.
Yes, I've had incidences in the past. Not the least of which was years and years ago, which I think I've discussed on the podcast that years and years ago when I had problems with my cable box, that I would get this weird issue with my cable box where when I would record Craig Ferguson, I would get this weird error late at night between like 12:25 and 12:35. And the repair guy that came out said that it was squirrels that were chewing in the cable. To which my response was, it only affects that one channel and only for 10 minutes and only on that time of night. Seems oddly specific for a squirrel bite. But anyway, and eventually when I found out how much they were not charging other people for cable service, when I tried to suggest that perhaps I wanted a similar package that other people were getting, they said the only way to do that was to cancel being a customer and then sign back up at some future point. So I just opted to dump my cable service entirely. So, you know, save myself $120-$130 a month on cable. And basically went to internet only. And that's been fine. And about 3 or 4 months ago, and I don't know how much you guys know about internet technology, but internet protocol standards, IP addresses were in many cases still are, what they call an IPv4 format, which is the standard potential of four sets of numbers separated by dots. So you have like your address is 10.0.0.1. That's a standard IPv4 address. That's 10.0.0.1 is home. In the future of technology, there's these IPv6 addresses, which are basically this gigantic hexadecimal series of numbers that, so the internet won't run out of numbers. A couple months ago, Comcast changed somehow their protocol and didn't really tell anybody, which is fine. But at that time, Jesse and I noticed that we were no longer able to play our Xbox games with one another within the same house. So right now, he has an Xbox One and I have an Xbox One, and we would play games together over my intranet. And that stopped working when this Comcast upgrade happened. And I tried everything in my networking knowledge, including trying to be very specific with IP address assignments and port forwarding and even putting one of the Xboxes in a DMZ. Anyway, long story short, couldn't get it to work. Even went so far as to put a plea on Facebook and put a plea on one of the forums on Google+, that's a gamers forum, and said, hey, here's my issue. Can anybody help me? And everybody said, well, sounds like you're doing everything right. So don't know. So I emailed the software company who manufactures the game that we can't play. Turns out they manufactured two of the games we couldn't play, so we figured maybe it's something in what they're doing. And they said, no, it should have worked, or it's not supported, but there's nothing we're doing specifically. So called Thromblast, called the provider, and said, here's the deal. I have tried all these network setting changes. I have tried the following, and nothing seems to work. And they said, okay, well, we'll take a look. And so they take a look, and they said, well, we can see all of your devices from our service center. So from our perspective, there's nothing wrong. So it's not our problem, it's your problem. And then he suggested that the problem really was that because both devices are on the same network And they don't limit the they don't do any packet shaping on my on a single line, which is what I have, a single cable modem line. So that if I have one Xbox that's pulling all of the data, it's probably choking the other Xbox off from getting any data. To which my response was, okay, I can appreciate that in concept. However, if that were the case, I would have issues on my network while I was trying to play that nobody else would be able to get any network speed on any of the other devices in my house, including Derek, who's already almost constantly gaming, the three Wi-Fi nodes, the four iPhones, the iPad, the laptop, and the other two PCs. Those would all experience network. Also,
what happened?
That's a beautiful place to stop that story. God
and
damn it.
My connection just died.
Oh.
You invoked Mach-ass ire.
Oh, that's. I'm letting him know he's frozen.
Motherfucker.
You have no video, but you're hilarious.
Oh, I can probably start video.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
You're on the right side now.
That was fucker. That was the most dramatic, perfect thing ever.
This is
that was better than me adding the extra song at the very end by accident.
So, where was I?
It was not better than that.
So, yeah, no, that was the best thing that ever happened. Anyway, after the technician was basically telling me that one Xbox was killing all of my network speed, I said, well, that might be the case, except that in concept, the reality is Jesse and I could each individually simultaneously connect with users outside of our network, such as any random assigned pairing. You can team up with anybody over the Xbox network and play with somebody else. He and I could both join a partner on the network at the same time that wasn't inside my network. So if it were a bandwidth issue that were choking, we wouldn't be able to do that either. So anyway, went round and round with them, and basically he said, well, I think it's probably your bandwidth. You're on a lower speed, so probably if we upped your speed, you might have better luck. And so I'm thinking I'm being upsold. Service is what I'm being sold now. Like, he wants me to spend lots more money to upgrade my service. And I have 100 megabit service before. And he said, well, we have this 200 megabit service, so it's twice as fast. And what I'll do is I'll give you a month of that for free to see if that fixes it. But then after that, if you choose to keep it, it's going to cost you a little bit more. And so, of course, I was like, well, how much more are we talking about? And so he says, let me look. So he does his little clicking away, clickety-clackety for a couple minutes. He goes, well, it will cost you $5 a month more. So I said, well, okay, for $5 a month more, doubling my internet speed is probably, you know, that's adequate. But again, don't think that's going to resolve the issue. So we go through all this rigmarole, upgrades the account. I'm getting like 238 megabits down now, which is pretty screaming fast. But still, the game doesn't work. So I go to Fry's Electronics Thursday night, buy my own cable modem that is not from the ISP, not from the service provider, bring it home, install it, call the service provider and say, I'm going to return your modem that I'm renting for $10 a month, and I'm using this other one that is supposedly approved by your service center, and I'm going to install that, and I'm going to use that from now on. And they said, okay, we'll just return it, and we will take the $10 a month rental fee off, and you'll be good to go. So basically, I have my own modem now, and I'm actually paying $5 less a month, and I have double the internet speed.
And you can it solved the problem?
It solved the problem. So
it's like an internal modem configuration or something?
It's something in their software. It's something in the software of their own proprietary systems and modem that was not allowing me to do what I wanted to do. And this new modem can do what I wanted to do, which is what I was able to do 3 months ago, which is what I had been able to do for a couple years on their old cable modem. So something they did upgraded it, or changed it, I should say, because it wasn't an upgrade for me. And after having them tell me repeatedly that it was nothing that they did, except it had to have been something they did, I resolved it by not using their equipment. But then today I get an email saying, tell us your opinion of our customer service interaction. So I posted that on Facebook because I was like, here's my response to that. And I'm so glad you asked. You're probably not going to be happy you asked, but here's my response. So.
Excellent.
We'll see what happens with that. But it just pissed me off because the technician who was trying to be helpful basically told me at the end of the conversation, you know, Google is a great resource for things that are sometimes difficult to troubleshoot that aren't necessarily obvious.
He told you to Google it?
Which I had already done before I had started the whole process, because wouldn't you do that anyway, just to see if you could fix it?
The blood of Father Anderson runs strong in you.
Just pissed me off. So condescending. Ugh, I was so mad. So I guess the good news is that... I will actually be saving money in the long run, and my internet speed is stupid fast, although apparently, you know, when I'm talking about them, they decided to dump me, so I wonder if that's a thing now,
that's
if I'm on
so
too long.
Funny.
I wonder if that's a thing. Much like before when the phone would disconnect, I wonder if there's a time limit. So, bastards.
It was perfect timing.
It was great. Yeah.
This is perfect. So, anyway, so... That's my story. I'll give you an update as I see it. That was a thing.
Yeah, let us know about Hamilton tickets, too. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And in other news, although this will be probably too late for anybody listening to the podcast, if you go to Wikipedia today, today's featured article is Ben Affleck.
Wow.
No.
I didn't even know they had featured articles.
I want to say it's every day, but maybe it's every week. But no, it must be every day because they say today's featured article. But
have you?
I don't think I ever go to the homepage.
Yeah, me either. Have you ever? Or are you exploring the 20-year anniversary, 20 days of Audible gifts?
No.
Oh,
should I be?
Well, we're about 14 days into it, so.
Oh.
There's not much left, but there was every day they would put something new up. And a couple of days it was like 20% off if you buy, you know, if you run out of credits, you can buy credits now for 20% off what they would normally cost you. But you had to be down to less than 2 credits. Well, that's ridiculous.
I'm not giving them any more money.
Oh, I give them all enough of money.
They get enough of my money. It's bad enough that I have to, now I'm to the point where I'm like, oh, I can pay $2.95 for, I'm not paying $2.95 for a 4-hour book. It's not in me anymore. It's not happening. It has to be of at least 8 to 10 hours, or I'm not wasting money on it.
No, I would for $2.95, I would buy a 4-hour book, but I would never. Well, that's not true. Never's a strong word, because I support Anthony D.P. Mann and Bleak December Artists. And I will buy a 23-minute audio play for $6. But that's it. That's the only people I would do that to, because I got to support the arts.
Is DP Man the crazy sex books?
No, it's Chuck Dingle.
Sorry.
No. Anthony Mann is he was half of the Horror Etc. podcast. The podcast that inspired me to want to make a podcast.
What threw me off was the DP. So.
Yeah, well, in Canada, that means something else. I actually thought it was, for a while, I thought it was his pretentious way of saying Anthony, director of photography, man. But I think there's plenty of other Anthony Manns in broadcasting. And he's actually done a fair amount of work with Canadian television and radio, I think. So.
I understand.
But he's been producing these short audio plays that are great, and he's been producing them on vinyl.
In horror news, I did make boyfriend Jesse watch Gremlins.
And what did he think?
He agreed that it was definitely not a Christmas movie as much as it was a horror movie. So, I think he liked it.
It's both.
But it's more horror than it is like family Christmas movie. He was amazed at the kind of the level of violence, which I think we were on rewatch also similarly chagrined. But we're getting ready to watch Gremlins 2, but I'm trying to ratchet down expectations and say that Gremlins 2 is not really...
Oh, it's much more of a kid's movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's really only a continuation of the Gremlins story in as much as it has Zach and Phoebe and Gizmo. But it's a very different... The movie's a very different tone.
Yes. So, speaking of tone... Actually, we're not, but I'm just trying to transition here. next week, Batman 1943, right? No, 1989.
1943.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.